All right, yes, 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 world. What's going on, man? This is your man, Buddy Romig, and we are back at it with another episode of the Yeah Buddy podcast. And this episode is brought to you by the Comedy Cash Cow Competition. So if you are a stand-up comedian and you want a chance to win $1,000 and star in your own short film movie, go to www.comedycashcow.com. That is going down May 25th, Vacaville, California, Comedy Cash Cow Competition. All right, y'all, let's get into it. Let's get to this episode. You know what I would do on the Yeah Buddy podcast. Every episode, I try to bring in one of my friends in the entertainment business. We chop it up, see what we got going on, talk about our journeys in the entertainment business, just crazy stories and things that we've learned along the way. And this episode is like no other. This episode, we got my good friend. We got stand-up comedian. He is host of the Say It Loud comedy show at Laughs Unlimited. He is a podcaster with his own podcast called Blunts and Bullshit. I want y'all to give it up right now for my good friend, Mr. Michael Calvin Jr., y'all.
Hey. How we doing?
Good, man. Good. How you doing, Mike?
Pretty good, sir. Pretty good.
Show. So what's going on with you, man? What's going on? You got a show tonight up at the Guild Theater?
Yes, sir. Tonight, we are live at the Guild Theater. Shout out to Drew Burks for the booking, DJ Soup, and DJ Soup on the ones and two. Shout out to the whole Guild Theater family. Tonight, it's Jarrell Parker, Drew Burks hosting, and myself, and your headliner is Hannibal Thompson out of the Bay. Shout out to Hannibal Jarrell and Drew and everybody.
Nice. And what's the next Say It Loud show?
The next Say It Loud comedy show is actually March 21st, and we have Kevin Tate. Kevin Tate will be your headliner, as seen on Comedy Central. Tour with Kevin Hart, big guy out of LA, has a lot of the Chocolate Sunday reels. A lot of the reels that they do, a lot of his have gone viral, over 100,000 views, the whole nine. So, yeah, this Thursday, Kevin Tate, get your tickets now.
Nice.
Oh, and all March birthdays are in for free with a valid ID. So if you're born in March, just have a valid ID and you're in for free.
Dope. Yeah. Slow it through. March, what was it?
March 21st. March 21st. Laughs Unlimited. Yeah. Show starts at 7 o'clock.
For sure. So yeah, you've been doing stand-up comedy, doing the Say It Loud for a minute. Like, how did you get started into stand-up just in general?
Started into stand-up, like, as far as, like, how did I get interested, or just kind of, like, what?
Was it something, yeah, like, what was it that made you, like, just get into, like, do you remember, like, your first, like, stand-up performance?
Yes, I do. I remember, so, like, growing up as a kid, like, I watched, my dad was a big Eddie Murphy fan, so, like, I watched a lot of Eddie Murphy growing up. So, like, Trading Places, Coming to America, Harlem Nights, The Golden Child. So 48 Hours, like, that was a lot of the stuff that, like, my dad would watch. And it was something, it was a moment that we would share together. So, like, as a child, I would watch that. And then when a Def Comedy Jam first came out, I was in, like, middle school. And what I would do is I would stay up late at night and I would take my little VHS tape and I would record all of the Def Comedy Jam episodes. And then, like, I would spend, like, the whole weekend, like, watching it. Like, I'd wait till my grandparents went to sleep, and then I would be up watching it. And then by the time Monday came around, when it was time to go back to school, like, I would literally have their sets memorized. So, like, when I would go to school on Monday, I would imitate whoever I thought was funny, and I would just, like, try to do their sets. So, like, in hindsight, that's where it all started. So my dad's interest in Eddie Murphy kind of led me into, like, when House Party came out, Martin Lawrence was who caught my eye in House Party. Even though he had a small role, he was the DJ. And so then he was the host of Def Comedy Jam. And so then I started watching that. Then I found out he was a stand-up comedian. And then, like, Martin, like, took off. Like, the whole Martin Lawrence thing became a thing. And so Martin was a big comedy influence. I followed everything Martin as a kid. Then fast forward to as an adult, how did I get into stand-up? Like, it was always something that interests me. Shout out to my boy, Andre Bailey. I've known Andre since I was a teenager. Like, I was 15 when I first met Andre. And Andre had already started doing comedy. Wow. When I was in my early 20s, I want to say, was when Dre first started. Dre's 4 years older than me, four or five years older than me. So, like, Dre had started doing comedy. And so I had my own interest. And so I started trying to figure out, like, where the open mics were and stuff like that. And then I saw Mike Epps stand up. And I don't mean this in any disrespectful way at all. But like in my early 20s, that's like when like Mike Epps started doing all the movies with Ice Cube.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw Mike Epps stand up. And like when I would watch Mike Epps and all of his movies, I was like, bro, I act like that in real life. Like, you know what I'm saying? But he's getting paid millions of dollars. And I was like, that is cool as shit. Like, it looks like all Mike Epps does is be himself all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets a bag for
it. Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, man, if I could do that, if I could just do that, that's what I would want to do for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no disrespect to Mike Epps, but like Martin Lawrence, Bernie Mac, Chris Rock, Dave Chappelle, like all of those people, like you kind of get like a God syndrome, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So like you look up to them and you're like, I'll never be that. And so like,
yeah.
But seeing Mike Epps, I was like, bro, if I could do that, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. I know I could do that because he just seems like he's being himself. So like,
yeah.
I could be myself. And so seeing Mike Epps do it gave me the motivation to feel like I could do it myself. And like, I don't mean that in like, I'm not shitting on the brother. He actually gave me the confidence to be myself because it looked like, you know what I'm saying? As much as I feel like, you know, Bernie Mac and all them and Kevin Hart, et cetera, like they're all being themselves. It just seemed like there was a level, and even at the level he's at, like I'm not shitting on it. It's super dope. But like, he was the one that made me feel like, all right, you could probably get us a try.
Yeah. He's one of those type of people that you just kind of like, I get what you said. He's that person that you look at, you'd be like, oh, I could do it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I could do this and shit like that.
But it's not like disrespectful though. Because,
no, not
like,
at all.
Because like,
you see yourself in them.
Yeah,
You see yourself in them. You're like, you look
exactly.
at it like, and like I said, everybody has that different type of person, like look like just on TV screen, because those are the people that we, you know, we don't really fit into. Like, we see ourselves like in the entertainment business because, or, you know, occupying this realm to some capacity.
Right.
We just, like, you just look at that one person that you see on the TV screen and it's just like a light bulb hits.
Yeah.
And you're
yeah.
Like, fuck. Like,
yeah.
I could, like, oh, damn. Okay. I see the way he's moving. He has similar personality, similar characteristics to me, to where I'm all like, okay, all I got to do is just kind of, like, not copy his, like, what he's doing, but just that work ethic and stuff
yeah.
like that. Like
yeah.
he's doing something that where I'm like, okay, oh, yeah, I could do it. Like, he cracked the code. Like, and it just flips that switch on you. You're like,
that's it. You
know? It's wild, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, seeing him, and then, so, like, I started writing, and then, shout out, Dre actually referred me to my first open mic, which was at, oh, my God, that's so disrespectful, Vince's?
Oh, Westac?
No, not Vince's. God dang it. It's in Rancho. That's so trash. I'm on an interview. I can't remember the first place I did comedy at. It was right over there in Rancho, like you can go over the overpass.
JB's?
Like, nah. It's like a biker bar.
Oh, I know what you're talking about, but it's changed names so many times though.
It's,
I feel like.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
See, all the OGs gonna be mad at me too for not getting it right. But like, all right, so the first place I ever did comedy at, it's like right over, God, why can't, it's gonna hit me too. But so like, Dre referred me to my first open mic, which was over in Rancho Cordova. Like tucked away, like if you're getting off of the freeway off of 50, it's like right off of the freeway, it's like right there. So at that time we're working at the motel, which was on the other side of the freeway. At that time it was a Quality Inn, so I was right, and this was when like the Michael Vick dog thing happened.
Mm.
So like I was writing a bunch of jokes about the Michael Vick dog thing, right? So I go to the open mic, and like I get there and I'm just kind of looking around. And I walk in, and I see the little sign-up sheet or whatnot. And so I just kind of, like, walk by it, but I got my notebook. And Patrick J. walks up to me. Shout out to Patrick J. I don't know him at the time, but he walks up to me, and he's like, hey. He was like, are you here for comedy? And I was like, yeah, I'm here to do comedy. I'm here to check it out or whatnot. And he was like, are you signing up? I was like, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure it out. And he was like, oh, all right. He was like, what's up? I'm Patrick J. And he sticks his hand out. And I'm like, what's up? I'm Mike Calvin. And like, he doesn't even shake my hand, bro. He literally spins off and is like, I'm going to sign you up. And he spins off. And like, I'm sitting there, I still got my hand out, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this bitch ass nigga. I'm like, I bet. Like, all right, so we in here with like, ha ha niggas, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I'm on that hype. Like, I'm coming from the streets and shit. I'm like, all right, so niggas is jokes in here. So, and then I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, all right, well, bet. He's the only one that knows my name. So like, if they call me, it's not like I got to get up. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I can sit there and be like, nigga, who the fuck is? Like, what? That guy left. So, you know, a bunch of other comics are there. They're signing up, you know, open mic starts, boom. People start getting up on stage, blah, 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 blah. Dre, so throughout the night, Dre shows up. And Dre's like, oh, what's up, Mike? Da, da. So I'm like, oh, what's up, nigga? I'm like, fuck. Now two people know who I am. So then Dre starts introducing me to like the people that he knew and shit. So I'm just kind of like, yeah, what's up? So at this time, Shane Murphy was the host. And Shane comes up to me and Shane's like, are you Michael Calvin? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, all right, well, you're next. And I'm like, all right. And he's like, so is there anything that you want me to say? And I was like, no, I'll just say my name, like Beyonce. You know, so he goes on stage and he fucking roasts me, bro. He goes on stage and he's like, ladies and gentlemen, oh my God, you guys are in for a treat. This man, oh my God, he stopped doing cocaine and flew all the way from Dallas, Texas to do comedy for you guys. Give it up for Michael Irvin. I mean, Michael Calvin. So like at this time I'm short hair and I ain't got the dreads, like I ain't got the glasses and shit. So like he's fucking clowning me. So like I go on stage and I was like, yeah. I was like, ladies and gentlemen, give it up for, or no, I was like, yes, I'm not the only celebrity here tonight. Give it up for your host, the dancing guy from the Six Flag ads. And I was like, dun, 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 dun. And so like, they started laughing and then I was like, it's funny that he was bringing up football, and I started talking about all of like my Michael Vick bits, and just my bits were basically about how Michael Vick's homeboys weren't shit, because like if you have a friend that's worth $100 million, like what else do you have to do but go to jail? Like if I have a friend that's worth $100 million, like bro, like I don't care if it's on film, like bro, that's me. Like yeah. I don't even know why we're still talking about all this video you have. Like, that's literally me on film. Like, take me to jail. Like, I'm not even sure why we're talking about this. Like, I don't even know this Michael Vick guy. I don't care if I have his shoes and jersey and all this other signed paraphernalia on. This is just crazy. This is a strange coincidence. So I had a pretty good set. So I got off stage, like they were clapping. And then I get off stage and Shane comes up to me and he's like, hey man, that was a great set. Like, how long have you been doing comedy? And I was like, bro, that was my first time ever on stage. And he was like, for real? And he was like, man, you got a good stage presence, so you should keep at it. And I was like, all right, cool. And then when I got off stage, like a lot of the other comics were like, said the same thing. They were like, how long have you been doing it? And I was like, bro, this is my first time ever. And they were just all like, what? And so like that was the first time, and that was 2006 was the first time I got on stage.
Yeah, I think he was at the first mic that I had went to up at the San Juan Club or North San Juan Club. I can't remember. Somewhere there off
in Roseville?
No, it wasn't in Roseville. It was in like Citrus Heights area.
Citrus Heights.
I think what was the name? Kevin Porter used to do it.
Oh yeah. Shout out to Kevin Porter. Yeah. Jesus, buddy, you been in the vault? Cause yeah, I forgot about that, Mike. Yeah, we was doing the little gig right there off of San Juan.
Yeah, it was somewhere like the Citrus Heights area.
Yeah. Carmichael area. Shout out to Kevin Porter. Yeah, we was doing the open mic out there.
Yeah, that was funny. Yeah, that was first open mic, and then put me on my first showcase up there. The little, we do some competition. I can't remember who was all up in there, that was first open mic. Yeah, first showcase I went to and stuff like that. So yeah, I remember.
That was with Corey Calvert. Shout out to Corey Calvert.
Yeah, that's what y'all was doing. That was my first like time being like put on or like seeing like the whole like Blunts and Bullshit crew. Like, y'all niggas even had the shirts on and everything. I was like, oh, these niggas. And again, like, this is like a like not even like a month into college. I'm just seeing, I'm like, oh, these niggas is like Cash Money out here.
Shout out to Fat Partner. Yeah. Shit, Fat Partner made those t-shirts, man. Shout out to my homeboy Stephon Williams, man. Shout out to Fat Partner Big Smoke. So yeah, for the people that don't know, Blunts and Bullshit. So back in the day, man, me, Corey Calvert, my partner, Big Smoke, we used to meet up in the morning and just smoke blunts and talk shit. Cause like I was always up early. Like I was up early. I would drop my daughter off at school. And so during the day, I just had free time. So like they would come through in the morning, we'd be smoking and talking shit. And then one day Smoke was like, nigga, I'm going live. And we was like, all right, fuck it. And so we just started just cutting up. And we did it once. Like, the views went crazy. And so then, like, we was like, fuck it, let's do it again. And then just, like, it kind of became a thing. And then shortly along the way, I had met my brother, Javon Whitlock. Shout out to Javon.
Hey, yeah, shout out to Javon.
Shout out to Amy Rogers. Because, yeah, just shout out to, God, I don't want to do that to her. The chick that used to be with the glasses with the short hair. Oh my God, what's her name? Oh my God, that's so foul. Cause she was a part of it too, and I don't want to.
Oh, I know who you're talking about, but I don't remember her name.
I can't remember her name. Jesus, but yeah, she also was a part of it. Short hair, glasses. Oh fuck, I can't remember her name. But so the show turned it turned into like an actual like real like podcast. Like we went from just like going live on Facebook in front of my apartment, and then we started like we went inside. Smoke made a theme song, Blunts and Bullshit. So he made the song, and then Javon came on, and then Amy came on. And so then, like, every morning, we would go on at 10:30. And then we'd go for about an hour and a half. We'd just be smoking and just, like, before the show, we'd, like, go on Twitter and see what was trending or just, like, random topics that were on in the news. And then we'd just more or less, like, riff and talk about everything that was going on. And you know, we had a good little run. Like at first it was me Corey and Smoke, and then it was me, Corey, Smoke, and Amy. And then Smoke started getting busy with his life, and then it became me, Javon, Corey, and Amy. And then, you know, life happens, people move, and et cetera, et cetera. And then it just became a me and Javon thing. But Fat Partner had already made the song. Mm-hmm. So, like, at that point, it was just me and Javon rocking. So, like, every morning, 10:30, we was on it. We was just on the topics. We'd film at his dad's house, at his parents' house, at my house, like, if we had shows on the road, like, nigga, we was filming in the car, like, just, yeah, the grind was crazy back then. Like, we was putting it in. We was getting it in. Shout out to the whole Blunts and Bullshit family. Without all of them, it couldn't have been what it ended up being.
No, it was dope, bro. I remember that was the time, like I said, y'all had, not only was he doing, like, the Blunts and Bullshit, but you're also doing, like, skits in between it. Really kind of just, Like just doing everything. Then with the whole doing the Say It Loud show too, still putting other comedians on too and stuff.
Yeah, shout out to Say It Loud comedy show. Speaking of, like, yeah, I guess we can talk about that. So for the people that don't know, I guess kind of talk about myself. So I've been doing comedy now since like 2006. So the way I got, so that's how I told you guys how I started doing comedy, my first open mic. I've been in a bunch of different like comedy groups. Shout out to my boy Leaf. The first comedy group I was ever in was Cowboys and Cannabis. It was me, a comedian named Leaf, aka Troy Goings. Oh shit, what was the white dude? Oh my God. I'm forgetting people's names. That's so trash. He was like a real cowboy, like a fucking redneck too, like a redneck cowboy. Like, and it was me, him, and I'm trying to remember who the other fucking part of the cannabis was, but we were in that group. And then, so when like I first started doing comedy, Leaf was literally the only one that was booking me. So like everything that Leaf did, he was putting me on. We actually did a live taping of that. Well, not a live taping, but we recorded it. So like there's a Cowboys and Cannabis DVD out there that I'm on. And then after being part of the Cowboys and Cannabis, I was still on the grind inside doing comedy. Actually, excuse me, let me backtrack, because big shout out to Sean Peabody. I want to give a big shout out to Sean P. Sean P was somebody that I met at my first open mic. And Sean P was literally one of the first comedy OGs that like took me under his wing and like put me on the road, took me to open mics, like introduced me to comedians in the Bay Area. After my first open mic where I did my first set, I met Sean P. And then like we went to Denny's or anything like that. And I met D Tyler. I met BT Kingsley, Ellis Rodriguez, E. Clark. I want to make sure I'm not forgetting nobody. So like Mikey Winfield. So like Sean P had a whole little crew called the True Grinders, right? And so like we would literally hit like four or five open mics a night, bro. Like, so we'd go from SAC, we'd leave SAC and go to the Bay. And so like we'd go to the Bay Area, and then out there at that time, Jesus, the Bay had like four or five open mics a night. So like literally we'd go down there and we'd do one show, and like Sean P used to get at me. Like Sean P used to be like, I mean, that was luck. Like you was lucky, but I mean, we're going to a new show. Like, I don't know if you can do it again. And I used to be like, the fuck, nigga, who you talking to? Like, so like Sean would be getting at me. So like every open mic that we went to, he'd be like, man, you just lucky. Like, I don't know. Like, so I'd be literally going up there trying to kill. And like, it was all in good fun. But like, he would always be like, I don't know, bro. Like, can you follow him? Like, he's funny. Like, I don't know. And so like, he would always do that. And so hit the Bay. He started a whole like True Grinder movement, which I want to say the True Grinder movement was before I joined the Mics, which the Mics was another comedy group that I was part of. And a shout out to the Mics, which was started by Michael O'Connell. Rest in peace. Michael O'Connell randomly messaged me one time saying that there were like, he had saw that there were a bunch of Mics in the comedy scene, a bunch of different guys named Michael. And he was like, we all have different styles of comedy. Like, how would you feel about being in a group? And I was like, fuck it. Like, sure. Like, you know, I'd been in a group before and it had worked out. So the group originally was Michael O'Connell, Mike Sinclair, Mike on the Mic, who used to be at the Rivercats, Mike Betancourt. Am I missing? Mike Sinclair, me, Michael O'Connell, Mike on the Mic. Who am I forgetting? Mike Betancourt, Mike on the Mic. Michael O'Connell, myself, Mike Sinclair. So that was the original five. So we did our first, we actually were on TV. We did Good Day Sacramento, which was my first ever TV gig. It was on Good Day Sacramento. We had our first show at Laughs Unlimited. Shout out to Laughs Unlimited. Did the show. The show was a success. Then Mike on the Mic started working more at the Rivercats for the games. He was doing the Mike on the Mic thing. So then it was just me, Mike Sinclair, Michael O'Connell, and Mike Betancourt. And then like the Mics like took off. We had t-shirts and like the whole nine. It was pretty cool. It was a mic logo with a microphone and it said the Mics.
Okay, dope.
Still got some t-shirts too. Shout out to the guys.
So from being a part of like being on multiple teams and on every team, like, you know, play like a different level, you know, from whatever your role may be when you do the campus comedy to like now, like being like, I guess you say you be like the full force, like behind the blunts and bullshit. What are some of the things that you look back on and say, like, these are the important things that I learned from the benefits of like working with the crew, but then also like the pros and cons?
I would say in my experience, the groups that I was a part of, there were different pros and cons. So just in a group dynamic, right? If we're just going to talk about working it as a group, right? We'll start with the negative, right? Because that's easier.
Mm-hmm.
So the negative is that it's a group project.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, everything has to be agreed upon or else you don't move forward, right? So the bad thing about being in a group is you pick up other people's bad habits,
mm-hmm. right?
So like if one of us lacks ambition, that could literally spread amongst the group, right? If one of us has a bad attitude, that could spread amongst the group. So in a group dynamic, the moment it becomes about an individual, it ruins the group dynamic because now it makes the other people in the group feel like they're just peons.
Mm.
And just at the end of the day, nobody wants to feel like they're a peon.
Right? Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
because even in a group dynamic, right? Like if you're on the Warriors or the Bulls, like everybody knows who Michael Jordan is and who is Steph Curry, right?
Mm.
But at the same time, don't make me feel like I don't contribute or just I'm somebody that's just tagging along. Like there are things that I contribute to the team that makes Michael Jordan or Steph Curry better because I'm on the team. So you have those moments like that, or you have somebody who's not Steph Curry or Michael Jordan and they think they're Steph Curry and Michael Jordan. So then it throws off the group dynamic because we as a group know who might be the star is.
Yeah.
And now somebody else is trying to like,
he's just Jordan Poole.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I'm saying? You're stop it. We've been doing this before you got here.
Mm.
So it's one of those things where that's the negative about the group dynamic is you pick up other people's bad habits, either intentionally or in intentionally.
Mm.
Now, the pros about being in a group is that marketing a group is easier than marketing yourself, right? Because the thing about marketing a group is that when you're marketing yourself, the conversation stops if I don't like you, right?
Yeah.
So like
yeah.
The moment I don't like Michael Calvin Jr., this conversation's over. But if I'm talking about the mics, I'm part of a group dynamic. And
mm-hmm.
then most people genuinely think of, when they think of a group, they think of diversity.
Mm-hmm.
They think that there's literally like you guys are put together because all of you guys bring something different to a table. So what I found with booking and marketing, it was easier to book the mics in comedy clubs and theaters and stuff like that. It was easier to book the mics than it was to book Michael Calvin Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Because once we research Michael Calvin Jr., if there's anything we can nitpick the things that we don't like about my Michael Calvin Jr.
Yeah.
But in a group dynamic, you know, first of all, I'm an individual representing a group. So just that within itself, it gives the impression that you're more business savvy, I would say. Because
yeah.
since you are part of a group, like I said before, the positive is everything you're doing, you're in agreement on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like one of us is just freestyling by himself, you know what I'm saying? Or even if one of us is freestyling, it's because you're the best freestyler.
Mm-hmm.
So go. You know what I'm saying? So everything is organized chaos would
yeah.
be the best way to put it. So that's the best part about being in a group is that you can hide yourself as an individual and focus on selling the group aspect of it because I can sell the mics and I can highlight all the things the mics do
mm.
and have done and not make it about my part. You know what I'm saying? So that to me was one of the things that I've learned, which has helped me with everything that I've done, like as far as with the Say Aloud Comedy Show, Smoking Joke Show, and all the other different open mics and stuff that I've had. And even like you said with Blunts and Bullshit, like I've learned how to work as a team and make it about the team and not necessarily about my individual preferences.
Yeah, because I think when you're doing things like that, like you're marketing, like you say, you're marketing like the mics or marketing Smoking Jokes, is what you're doing is you're creating a brand. With every group, And when you do that, like when you're creating a brand, you don't approach it from the same point as like how you say, like booking yourself, because you're doing it from like a very selfish or selfless standpoint. Whereas, mm-hmm. but like with your brand, you're building up a business. So you have to make business decisions. And that's the most important part of like being in the entertainment business.
Yes.
Is the business aspect of it and learning it to some capacity to where like, you know, where you could fit into that realm, because as a comedian, you have to understand just how important being able to conduct yourself in a professional way.
Yes.
Will help get you so far ahead.
Yes.
In this game.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like I agree with that 1,000%, which is also when you're thinking about the team dynamic, you tend to avoid doing personal things that affect the group, right? Like, so here's the weird thing about comedy, right? Is that you get into the business because, you know, it's a free speech thing, but you can find yourself putting yourself in a position where you're not saying certain things because you're not trying to, you know, ruffle any feathers or razzle dazzle anybody, et cetera, et cetera. But I feel that that's where the challenge is, mm-hmm. is that, no, you got to find a way to say what you're trying to say. Just your problem is your choice of words at that moment. You're avoiding the challenge that comes with creating something that comes with that.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And nah, it's not about not say that. It's say that. Mm-hmm. You just got to find your way to say that. And like, for example, and shout out to Mario Hodge, because he posted something about this the other day. He was talking about how when black comics like go extra hard in front of white people, like, mm-hmm. and then you get just like nigga, nigga, nigga all in front of white people, and it's down to third. And then like, that's annoying. And then I've also seen black people pump fake in front of the white people because they like now all of a sudden you don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what you've been doing. So now you get to the point where now it's time and now you pump faking. So in my opinion, I feel that's the comedy grind, right? Is you learn how to be yourself in all environments, or you avoid the challenge, because mm-hmm. in every different open mic and in every different comedy booking, it has its own set of challenges. So what most comics end up doing is you fall into your comfort zone and you only go to like these type of rooms that have this type of environment or that type of environment where the challenge is being to go anywhere and do your thing. So the benefit of being in a group is that that group will normally put you in places where as an individual, you might not have been able to get to. So working with the mics, like, we did a show, Jesus Christ, it was in the middle of nowhere up north, like past Auburn or something. It was a theater show. I want to say we only had like 20 people or some shit that showed up, but we still did it. And they breaded us out. It was a pretty good payday. Shout out to mm-hmm. wherever that place was. But it was all, you know, all white people. We're in the middle of nowhere. And just, I've never felt the need to tailor my comedy to any individual crowd. Like, yeah, as a comic, you might, in the flow of it, create some things, mm-hmm. you know, but I'm not pulling back on nothing. Like, I've crafted this in a way that it should work everywhere.
Yeah.
And that comes from being in a group where, you know, different, because when you're in a group, everybody is supposed to be helping with the bookings. So the people that might like a buddy that make that call for the booking might not have been somebody that would have been fucking with me.
Mm-hmm. You
know what I'm saying? But now I got to make sure that in a group dynamic, I'm not throwing this whole thing off.
Yeah.
And then also you don't want to become like the guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not trying to be the black guy. In the group. Like, I'm not trying to be the weed guy. Like, oh, when he comes up, here we go. You know what I'm saying? Like, so, and that's with the journey with your writing is that, you know, which again, if you want to be the guy, that's your thing. Like, I don't knock it, but I've always looked at developing the craft. So wherever I go, I can do this.
Yeah.
And I'm not watering it down, nor am I blackening it up. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? Like I'm a nigga 24/7. So being a nigga around some niggas, that ain't nothing new. And so it's not like I'm uncomfortable or being watered down about it. Just like when I'm in situations where there's not a lot of niggas, like it's not like all of a sudden I don't know how to conduct myself or use a vocabulary that these people can't relate to. Or if I feel like nigging it up in front of these people, like, oh, whatever.
Mm. No, I remember talking about just like, just going to different rooms and just being funny. Like going back to Andre Bailey, like the first time I went to touch a class, I did all right. But yeah, Andre Bailey, he just pulled me to the side. He's like, yo, bro, just people is people. He's like, just make them laugh and shit. At the end of the day, bro, just make them fucking laugh and shit, bro.
Yeah.
Mm.
Like that's, I see, people don't get it. And when I do interviews like this, like I always try to point to this out, like doing, like black audiences have a higher standard for comedy than most crowds, because most black people only relate comedy to their favorite comedian. Mm-hmm. And in most cases, black people are literally comparing you to a fucking legend. You know what I'm saying? Like their favorite is a Kevin Hart or like Bernie Mac, Dave Chappelle, Dion Cole. Like they're literally comparing you to somebody who in their field, they're the fucking shit.
Yeah.
And here you are, somebody I've never saw before. I had to pay $20 to get in this bitch. Nigga, go. like I ain't trying to see all the dancing and all that. Nigga, I dance better than that. Nigga, I got that outfit. Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? So like in general, like black out, and then, you know, black people in general, they got to work harder to get their money and all the stuff we deal with as just being black. So like there's that part of it. So when it comes to now I'm supposed to just give you some laughs, nigga, like, nah, nigga, you got to get this. Like, you know what I'm saying? Ain't no giveaway laughs in a black audience. Yeah, like
you got to bring that work. Like,
well, but again, when you look at it from that perspective, right? Because I'm a fan of comedy. I've been to comedy shows like before I was doing comedy. Like, bro, I'm judging you to the highest scale, whereas anybody else, I'm not doing that with them. So literally my bar for them is lower.
Mm.
And in my experience, and this is no disrespect to white crowds or anything like that, but just they're... Sometimes you're going to deal with audiences that their only engagement with the black person is coming to see their favorite performers. So this is literally their moment where they can say they have a black friend. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So when you look at it from that perspective, the bar is a bit lower. They've never saw that dance. You know, they're trying to put together, like, what does it mean? Mm-hmm. Like, does the shirt mean something? Does the pants mean something?
There's a deeper meaning.
Yeah, like, everything is deeper when just, like, nah, bro, these are just dance. Yeah, this was the outfit I put on the way here. Like, it's not that deep. Whereas with, you know, with black people, nigga, I got all that, nigga. Mm. And mine is better.
Yeah.
So, there's that. But I love it, like, which is why... A great show gives you a good mix of everybody. You got people that have high standards of comedy. You have people that might be easier to entertain.
Mm.
So that's what makes a good crowd.
How do you take that approach and apply it to when you're doing the Say Loud comedy show? Well, let's go back to like how the Say Loud comedy show even like got started.
Aha, all right, bet. So shout out to Jennifer Canfield, owner of Jennifer Canfield and her family, Laura and Skip. Owners of Laughs Unlimited. So rest in peace to TV Entertainment, my homegirl Tavina Crocker. So my homegirl Tavina, she had a brother that was trying to do comedy. God, why can I not think of his name? I'm forgetting so many people's name, bro. That's so trash. But her brother was trying to do comedy, and like I had already like kind of had my foot in the game. So like she put her first show together at Tommy T's. So we did a show at Tommy T's out there. Show was a success, packed out like the whole nine. So fast forward to she wants to do it again at Laughs Unlimited. So excuse me, she invites me to have a mixer with the owner. So like they're having drinks, et cetera, et cetera. So we get to meet the owner. To TV's kind of telling her about how she wants the show to run, et cetera, et cetera. Introduce me, I'll be the host. First time I meet Jennifer, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Show date is on the date that the show's on. So boom. on the day of the show starts at 8. I get to laughs at like 7, bro. Like, I get to laughs unlimited at like 7 o'clock. And when I get there, like, the club is like kind of open. And like, I don't really see anybody. So just I walk in and I just kind of sit down. I got my material. I'm just kind of writing. And then Jen walks in and I remember her from the mixer. And I'm like, hey, excuse me. I was like, you remember me? I'll be the host for tonight. And she's like, yeah. And I was like, so curious, like, is there any like drink specials or any like announcements you want me to make while I'm on stage? And she like double looks at me and she's like, are you serious? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, she was like, you might be my favorite host and you don't even fucking work here. And I'm still, and then, you know, Jen, like, she's real sarcastic. Like, she's tall, like, she's thick. So like, this whole conversation, I'm just kind of like, I'm like, am I fucking up right now? Like,
is this in trouble?
So I was like, am I in trouble? Like, I feel like I'm doing the good thing right here, right? So she's like, yeah, actually, you know, there's a show coming up, blah, 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 blah. So I get that. And so shout out to TV. We do the show. Show goes well. I have a great set. At the end of the night, she books me to host at the club not that weekend, but for a future date. So that was when I got my first weekend at Labs. So the Say Aloud Comedy Show comes about when I had brought a cat. Steve, shout out to Steve Fury. I was working at Labs and I brought Steve Fury to do a guest set at Labs Unlimited because I was telling him, I was like, bro, I'm hosting and like, I think that I could get you in. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm doing pretty well. So like, just come up and do a guest set. So he comes, does a guest set, fucking kills it. Steve Fury, funny comic. You know what I'm saying? Does his thing. Still doing his thing. So he kills it. Jen books him. Couple months later down the line, me and her having a like conversation after like a comedy competition. And she's talking about how like some of the competitions don't produce people that work at the club. She's like, I've been doing these competitions and just sometimes people win the competition, but they don't fit the weekend club setting. And she was like, and then sometimes comics, you guys refer your friends, which I get it. Like if you're working at a club, why not hook your friends up? And she was saying that, but the problem is that you guys lose credibility with me when you book people, when you send me people that aren't funny and like, but that's your friend. But at the same time, it changes my opinion on your opinion of funny because you sent me somebody who's not funny. So now I can't necessarily trust the referral. So like, as we're kicking around, she's just kind of spitballing the idea. And I was like, well, what if I had a comedy show that was for people that didn't work at, that was specifically for people that didn't work at the club, but it wasn't like a competition. It was more or less like an audition show. And she was like, all right. She was like, sure, I'll give you a date, blah, blah, blah. She gives me a date. Night's over. I go home. She calls me the next morning and is like, your idea kept me up. And she was like, because I feel like you really have something that could work if you were open to some things that I won't want to talk to you about. So, bro, we had about a 2-hour conversation about, from a club owner's perspective, like what it takes to be successful, like what on their end they need to see as far as revenue, turnout, et cetera, marketing ideas, blah, blah, blah. So I get off the phone with her, call Mikey Winfield. Shout out to Mikey Winfield.
Oh, yeah.
Another comedy OG, big bro. So I call Mikey and I tell Mikey, I'm like, hey, bro, like Jen's letting me do a show. Like what should I do to make this like show pop? And Mikey's like, that's dope. He's like, that's dope. He's like, congratulations, bro. So then literally I get another 2-hour conversation where Mikey is literally just nigga giving me the business. Mikey's like, bro, you got to understand that everything is a representation of you. If the toilets don't work, that's a representation of you because it was Mike's show that we went to and the toilets didn't work. If the comics are making rape jokes, nigga, that was your show where they were making those creepy jokes. Excuse me. If the flyer's trash, it's your flyer that's trash. Mm-hmm. So Mike taught me that everything about the show is a representation of you. And you have to think about that when you're putting it out there. And not only that, he mentioned how 9 times out of 10, I'm going to be doing a show where the people aren't going to know the comics that I have on the show. So to get around that, I had to have something that was giving back to the crowd, like something that made them feel like they were getting something out of going to the show to see some comics that they've never heard before.
Yeah.
So like Mikey was telling me all that, and just like, so boom, get off the phone with Mikey. And then it was just like to the drawing board. So like I was coming up with a bunch of different ideas. But prior to getting the show at Laughs, shout out to Terrence and man, Brother Given, they had an open mic that I won, and I became the host, and I was hosting it in downtown Sac. It was a Tropicana, I think that's what it was called, whatever. So prior to that, I was doing the open mic comedy competition. Saul Trujillo won the competition at that one that I had. Shout out to Saul.
Oh, yeah.
So fast forward to, I get the show at Laughs. Howard is already making my flyers because we were doing the thing. And so I was trying to think of a name for the comedy show, and just, you know, different things kept coming to me. And then just, I had had an interesting set a couple weeks prior to that with another comic. And like in this particular situation, we were doing a show in Folsom, and we were smoking a blunt. And this nigga was talking to me about how he felt like he should have known that the show was going to be kind of weird because I was on the show, and I was like trying to get where the nigga was going with what he was saying. And he just said that I wasn't a black comic. This is a nigga saying this shit too, mind you. And he was just saying, well, like, you're not like a black comic. And I was thinking to myself, and I'm looking at this nigga, I'm like, nigga, I ought to hit you in your face right now. But so we're smoking and whatever, and I'm just listening to what he's saying. And just long story short, that particular night, I had a better set than him, and he had to follow it. And that particular night, he had a rough night. So at that particular time, I'm thinking of a name for the comedy show. I'm like trying to think of something. So like James Brown starts playing, like, randomly. It was when the James Brown movie was
out. Oh, yeah.
And so it was just, say it loud. I'm back and I'm proud. Say it loud. And I was just like, boom. I'm like, say it loud comedy. So in essence, it's say it loud. I'm black and I'm proud.
Yeah.
But just say it loud comedy. So it was subtle, black as well.
Yeah. I said, niggas welcome.
Yeah. Say it loud. And so I was... To this date, it was going on 11 years ago. My first show, Marcus Miles, Cheryl the Soccer Mom Anderson. Oh, God, Cheryl the Soccer Mom. Carlos Rodriguez. Mars Parker. Shout out to Mars Parker. It was on my first ever Say It Loud comedy show. And, yeah, my first show was in August, and we was on and popping. And so, yeah, the first comedians that were to ever get booked at Laughs Unlimited for a paid weekend is... Chris Riggins, Des Henderson, and Eric Murphy were on the third ever Say It Loud comedy show that I ever had. And all three of them got passed on that show. And Chris Riggins is still doing comedy. I'm not sure. Des, shout out to Des. I'm not sure what Eric Murphy's still doing right now, but anybody who's ever saw Chris Riggins, he's a beast. And just... Every time I see Chris's success, like, to me, I'm like, it's nothing new to me. Cause yeah. Like I've known since I saw the guy, like, nah, Chris is a beast. Like, Chris Riggins is a monster. So shout out to Chris, like, for real.
No, yeah. Me and Chris was in a movie together
last
year. No, last year, about the year before, stuff like that. It was funny. It was a movie about, like, stand-up comedy.
That's tight.
Like, I was just playing myself, just performing comedy that he's on, like, he roasted me a little bit and shit like that, but he was playing the host of the comedy competition.
Shout out.
Yeah.
Hey, shout out to the gang, man. Shout out to Chris Riggins, man.
Yeah, you know. Yeah,
Chris, love that guy.
Yeah,
that
Chris. Guy. Yeah, just talked to him. I'd say, yeah, Chris doing really big things. That's what's up. Good to see.
Heck yeah. Like, I'm telling him all, like, every chance I get, if he's available, I try to have him when I do the anniversary show in August. Like, I always try to have him be the headliner because, number one, I feel like without him, I wouldn't have had the show that I had, because he was literally the first one Jen ever picked from a Say It Loud comedy show. Was Chris Riggins. So like, and the whole point of my show was to help comics get paid weekends. So just like, I don't want to just, yeah, like I just, every time Chris does something, it's not a surprise to me. It's literally like, bro, you've been that guy. And like, ever since I first saw it, and just the, like, I'm happy to see more people see the talent that he has. Cause yeah, like, so anytime I get the anniversary show and if he's available to headline, he's always who I got closing it. And then not only that, not only is he part of the success of the show, like, he's a beast. So like, every time he's coming, like, it's not like you're going to get the same jokes. He got a whole new get down and it's always fire. So shout out to the guy.
Well, yeah, shout out to Chris. And so you've been doing it for how long again? What was it? You said about like 11 years or
2006, bro. 2006? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. 18 years. 18 years. Yes, sir.
So that's like one of the, longest running like comedy shows.
Oh no, the Say It Loud comedy show is going on. This year will be 11 years.
Yes. I mean, yeah. But still, yeah, that's still one of the longest running comedy shows just around the Sacramento that I can remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only in Touch of Class has been the only thing that's been going longer than the Say It Loud comedy show.
Yeah, that's because, yeah, Touch of Class is that the institution, though. That's where it teaches. Like, every comedian I've had on the show, like, it always comes back to, like, just the Touch of Class. It just, just the type of institution that it is for comedians.
Man, bro, let me tell you about the Touch of Class, man. Shout out to B.T. Kingsley, man. B.T. Kingsley was the first ever creator of the Say It Loud, of the Grown and Sexy Comedy Night. And like, man, when BT was the host, let me tell you, it was, you know, that Prime documentary where they were talking about how lit it was at the little chocolate sundaes or whatever they were doing thing, bro, BT had that popping in sack. Like, literally the Touch of Class would be like 100 plus every Sunday. Bad ones, homie, like some of the baddest females you've ever seen, like, and like, everybody, like, it was literally like Grown and Sexy. Like, you had to come fitted. Like, wasn't no coming like how some people just come to roll to the cut. Like, nah, bro, not on that night. Like, you fuck around and not be dressed right, like, you don't even want to get on stage because everybody looked. So BT would have that thing popping like this 2006-7 ish, like, and BT was like, BT Kingsley was the nigga, like, for real, like, he had that thing popping. And so, like, not only that, BT's a beast, so he was on stage dropping fire and then bringing niggas up. So fuck around and not be if you couldn't ride the wave and you got drowned. Shout out to DJ Rip One. Them niggas was dropping bombs when you was on stage. Niggas be like, bah, 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 and niggas start bombing you while you was on there. Oh man, niggas would turn your mic off and have a nigga come get your bruh. It was real life. Night at the Apollo, like, nigga, you get roasted. And then not only that, BT gonna get on stage and then get on you for bombing. And then he might do another 5-10 minutes of nigga super duper fire and then bring the next nigga up. So like, bruh, so literally all night you could fuck around and like, I done seen cats be like, nah, I ain't going up. I've went there on nights and seen stuff and been like, nah, I don't feel like I got the glow tonight. So I done seen plenty of cat turn fade down. So you know what I'm saying? When it came to the Touch back then, and then Andre Bailey became the host and kept it going. And then at that time, that's when Tristan started Nutty Monday. Shout out to Tristan Johnson. And then, yeah, man, like back in my early grinding days, like the Touch of Class on Sunday. And then when Tris started Nutty Mondays, like, bro, literally Sunday, Monday, you had to bring your A game, brother. Like, you had to bring your A game, and not just A game as far as comedy. You better be dressed right or you're going to get your feelings hurt because they're going to talk about your outfit, too. It was black comedy, bro. We talking about ashy fingers. I'm talking about last year's fits. Like, oh yeah, bro, you was getting it. But it was all love, man. It was all love. So like, you looked forward to it, bro. Like, you looked forward to it.
And, you know, you was going to get, you know, you was going to become like, it's just going to make you a better comedian.
Heck yeah.
It was.
But just not only that, like, bro, you like, cats was coming through, like when like the Rodney Perrys, the like all of the people, like before they became big, like Tiffany Haddish, like niggas was coming through there to the touch. Like BT was bringing people, like, you know what I'm saying? So like it was a bunch of little like big name, like people that are big names now that slid through to the touch. Like, hell, BT was instrumental in having the whole Kevin Hart Heart of the City thing at the touch of class when that thing happened. So, you know, like BT put on for the city, and he did all of it at the touch of class. So a lot of things that are still going now, he was the foundation for that. Mm-hmm. So even when I got my chance to host the touch of class, like shout out to Beltroy, Tia, the whole touch of class family. You know what I'm saying? Like, when I had my opportunity to host, I did my best to try to bring back the BT style. Like, I was clowning niggas. Like, if niggas wasn't funny, I was talking about them. Like, it was like, yeah. So, yeah, I was a little aggressive with my, well, in today's comedy environment, what I was doing was a little aggressive. But at the end of the day, like, if you're a comic, you get it. Like, I'm having fun with you. I'm not belittling you. I'm not bullying you. It's all, these are just jokes. So, and that was a comedy environment I grew up in. So shout out to Sean P. Like, I grew up with, are you sure you can follow him? Like, oh no, bro. Like, I mean, you've been lucky lately.
Oh, yeah.
You know, shit. I've done it to you. Shit. I do it to Javon all the time. No matter where we go, I'm like, bruh. I'm like, I don't know, my nigga. Like, no, bruh. You've been lucky lately. He'd be like, all right, nigga. So, yeah, shout out to the gang, man.
Yeah, one thing I did notice, because, like, BT, he's out there in LA. He's hosted, like, Chocolate Sundays. And there is something that I noticed just, like, because I went down to LA last year.
And he's in the Sprite commercial.
In the Sprite commercial, yeah. But there's just something about, like, I don't know, like, there, like, something in the waters out here, like, especially like you say, during that time, that just bred a lot of beast. Mm-hmm. A lot of beast that, like... Yeah. Came for that period of time, because, like, not even like just from up here, but like in SAC, you're talking in like the Bay Area, you're talking like, because, you know, Mario Hodges, we're talking about, like, you know, the Rico, the Grays, we're talking about the Reginas, we're talking about, like you say, Tristan, we're talking about Lance Woods, we're talking about Mikey Winfields, all these comedians, that Carlos Rodriguez, all these comedians that are something about, there's something about out here that just
Anthony K,
like all these things that you talk about, just how the way the times were, you could just definitely see
insane wings.
Insane way, yeah. You see just how much of there's a strong community of comedians that you're like, motherfuckers really out here just fucking funny.
Yeah, I actually got I got that one time when I was in. I did a show in Denver, and one of the cats I did a show with, I fucking killed it that night too. And afterwards he was like, so Sacramento, he was like, yeah, he was like, do you know Lance? I was like, yeah, I know Lance. And he was like, yeah. He was like, wait, he was like, there's another guy out of there. I was like, Kyrie Shabazz. And he was like,
Kyrie's another one too. Yeah.
He was like, Kyrie's from Sac. I was like, yeah. He was like, no, but he was like, he has an afro. And I was like, Mikey Winfield. And he was like, yeah. He was like, yeah. He was like, man. He was like, you Sacramento guys are pretty good. Like, and I was like, damn. I was like, that nigga, that's a murderer's row right there. Mikey, Lance, Kyrie. Like, yeah, nigga. Like, man, yeah. Happy to be mentioned in any time those three get mentioned, because, like, we all have the people that we're chasing. So, like, in terms of, like, my Sacramento icons or people, like, I look up to, Lance. Well, Mikey Winfield, well, in no particular order, Mikey Winfield, Lance Wood, Kyrie Shabazz, because, like, they doing it. Shout out to all three of those guys. Definitely the Sacramento Kings for sure right there.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
And then even the, because you said, like, they had Kevin Hart filming the Heart of the City out here at the touch of class. But there's just, I don't know.
Shout out to, you know what, I can't say Lance and not say Tony Roberts. Like, man, shit, shout out to Tony Roberts, one of the greatest motherfuckers that ever get on stage.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Tony Roberts, legend. Make sure you see Tony Roberts live. Shit, I'm not, let me not fucking, yeah. Monster. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. No, totally, yeah. Right there. Yeah. Since we mentioned the people. Yeah. Tony Robbins. Beast.
Yeah. No, it's definitely, like I said, we're definitely fortunate. Sometimes say the one, like we was talking about, like applying, like putting that work and stuff like that. Like one of the things that I think that I took away, like not taking advantage of, is just understanding the fact that we are lucky to be the presence around so many communities where we could just soak up the type of game to where, like, going back to how you say, to be like with the Mike Epps situation, like this is the person who like clicked, right? Like, oh, this made me want to do it. Like we got them in abundance out here compared to like other, unless you're talking about LA, New York.
Right. Okay, bet. On that note, since we're talking about Sacramento work ethic, the three people I mentioned, right? Kyrie, Lance, and Mikey Winfield, as a person who has like saw their arc, right? Saw when they were, you know, doing the regular open mics, like the rest of like all comics. And then like now they're on tours, they're in theaters, they're in arenas, they're in movies, they're, you know what I'm saying? Opening for big names and are big names within themselves. So like people don't know this, like unless you saw it. I saw Lance Woods stand by the door at the end of the night and take everybody's cell phone and ask them to follow him on Instagram. Like every show, every open mic, Lance would be right there at the end of the night, taking people's phones, typing it in, follow me, boom, follow me, boom, 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 boom. So like that type of dedication, and you see where a person's success is, like, bro, like, I saw Lance do that with my own eyes, and I used to be like, nigga, I am not doing that. Like, that is fucking crazy. Like, you're just gonna fucking, like, and just to see where he's at with his followers and with his grind and his ability to pack out shows, like, bro, discipline, and that's something you can learn from. Mikey Winfield. Every time Mikey Winfield comes out to an open mic, Mikey Winfield has a notepad and a pencil and a pen, and Mikey Winfield is literally writing until he gets to the stage. He is writing. He'll entertain you, be polite the whole shit, and then he's gonna get right back into his groove of writing, and then he's gonna get on stage and he's gonna perform some of the most master crafted comedy you are ever gonna fucking see. Like I say it all the time, like Mikey Winfield is a fucking, he's like a comedy sensei, because it's gonna be, you never know where it's gonna go, but it's gonna be funny, because Mikey can get gutter, he can get clean, like just everything about Mikey's style is just perfection. So, and just to see somebody who, even when I first started doing comedy, he had had a certain level of success. Like one time me and Javon were in Vegas and we just randomly saw Mikey Winfield on one of the Vegas casino things. And we were like, oh, he's really that nigga. Like, what the hell, damn. You would never know, because he's so polite, he's so cordial, he's so respectful. So just like to see his grind and see his success, it's one of them things where like, bro, when you see it up close, you're not surprised. Like y'all are late to the party. Like some of us have seen it firsthand. Kyrie Shabazz, like, man, his writing is fucking crazy. And like, I remember there was a time, and this is no knock, but just there was a time where people were saying that they felt he was a joke thief because he was doing, you know how you can remix a joke, or just your perspective on a joke is the same as something. Like if you're making a fat joke, right? Some of what you're going to touch on, somebody's heard before.
Yeah.
But just you might have got to the same destination, just took a different route, right?
Mm.
So like at that time, he was getting hit with that. Man, his fucking writing now, you would never in your life confuse him for being somebody else. And his writing is so fucking phenomenal. If you've ever gone to like go to his Instagram page and watch his clips, like, bro, them jokes are mastercrafted. Like, for real. Again, sensei cut on the shit. Same thing with Lance. Like, these dudes are masterful with those words. Like, And I'm not knocking nobody who I may not be mentioning, because I know how niggas get in their feeling. But I'm just saying that as far as people who are from Sacramento, well, people that rep Sacramento are from Sacramento, like in terms of the success that they have, being a guy from Sacramento, those are the three people that I'm like, all right, that's the beaten path that you're trying to follow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely would say, like, let's say going back to how you're saying with starting up the startup Say It Loud, giving comedians opportunities and stuff like that. That's the same type, like the work ethic that you put to that. Like you even took Say It Loud show out to Vegas, you know, doing shit out in Vegas.
Yes. Once upon a time, the Say It Loud comedy show was in Vegas, but it was called, oh God, what we called it? It was called Comedy Night at the Chocolate Lounge. But it was basically a co-production of the Say It Loud comedy show. Shout out to Cynthia Steger. So the way the Vegas thing came about was, speaking of Blunts and Bullshit, the little live podcast we were doing, we had a guy that used to regularly watch the show. He was out in Nevada. He worked out a bar. His bar had a comedy night. So he invited me and Javon out there to do the comedy night. We met the host of the comedy, Manfred Haim. Shout out to Manfred Haim. And so Manfred was telling us that he had a show in Vegas, that since we were doing the show Monday, we could follow it up and do the show Wednesday. So we're like, all right, bet. So we do the show at the bar, had a good time, had a great set. At the end of the night, we met Cynthia, and come to find out, she had dibbled and dabbled and watched Blunts and Bullshit here and there. So, you know, she was like, oh, yeah, I'm happy to finally meet you guys. The comedy will be in there. She was like, our turnout is hit and miss sometimes, but she was like, you guys will be paid regardless. So we're like, cool. So we get there and we get to Vegas. So the show's at the Candy Factory on the Vegas Strip. It was at the Candy Factory. And upstairs from the Candy Factory is a room called the Chocolate Lounge. So, like, they would do the show up there. So when we got there, Manfred told us that, like, we could get anything on the menu half off. And he said that it's the same menu as what they have downstairs, but since we're ordering it upstairs with the comedy show, everything was half off. So we're like, all right, fucking bet. So like we get there and he pulls us to the aside and he's like, dude, we haven't had a turnout in like a long time. He's like it's kind of hit and miss, but y'all are paid regardless. So, nigga, me and Javon is like, nigga, I ain't come all the way to Vegas to not do the show, nigga. Like, fuck that. So just, mind you, we're on the Vegas Strip. Like, we're in front of the Bellagio, the Bellagio and the Vito, or Vita, whatever it is. And then, like, there's a mall behind us. So, like, he goes upstairs, I go downstairs. We just start grabbing people like, hey, we're about to do a comedy show upstairs. It's free, yada, yada, yada. Nigga, I literally go into the Candy Factory, and I'm like, hey, look. Everything y'all paying for right here, like if y'all go upstairs, y'all can get that for half off, and you get comedy show. And they was like, for real? I was like, yeah. I was like, they ain't gonna tell you. I was like, but just y'all could take that upstairs, and you know what I'm saying. You ain't gotta pay the full price. And then like one of the chicks was like, well, who's on? I was like, I'm performing, and my boy. And then her partner was like, fuck who's performing. If it's half off, we're going.
Mm-hmm.
So she takes him upstairs. Boom. I go upstairs. Javon is recruiting people, got people coming in. So bow. We get about 15, 20 people up in that G thing. Nigga, we get the show going. Nigga, show popping. Nigga, Javon kill it. I kill it. So at the end of the night, Cynthia comes up to me and like I'm telling business out, I'm personal shit outside, but whatever. This is how the show came about. So she comes up to me and she's like, Can I talk to you guys after the show? And we're like, all right, cool, yeah. She's like, you know, we're about to pay us. And so like, yeah, cool. And so she pulls me to the side and she's like, look. She's like, we've been doing the show now for about a month and a half. And she was like, this is the biggest turnout we've ever had. She was like, and she was like, I'm not even sure. Like, she was like, watching what you guys did, she was like, I've literally been trying to ask him to do that as the host, and he just hasn't been doing it. She's like, and I'm not even sure why. She's like, you guys don't even live out here, and you guys were able to what? She was like, round up like 20, 30 people in like, what, 15 minutes? And she was like, so I say all that to say, like, how would you feel about running the show? And I'm just like, lady, we live in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. Like, how the fuck am I going to run a show in Vegas? But I'm a nigga, so never know, always yes. I was like, am I a nigga? I was like, I don't know. Like, if we're going to be coming all the way back and forth, like, we're probably going to have more money. Like, I don't know if, like, the budget that we have right now would cover it back and forth. So she's like, all right, what if I, and then she threw out a higher number. And she was like, what if I could get you? She's like, I can try to get you guys this. She's like, but I can for sure get this. She's like, but I can try to kick it up and try to get it. Would you guys be interested in doing it? I was like, nigga, yeah. Like, answered always yes. So yeah, we said yes. Boom. So now, at this particular time, we're doing Blessing Bullshit Monday through Friday, the podcast. We had the Say It Loud comedy show on Thursday. We were also at this time doing the Say It Loud Sunday show at Monty's Lounge in Rancho, excuse me, which was an open mic. Shout out to everybody at Monty's Lounge. I hate the fact that I'm forgetting motherfuckers' names right now, because my guy with the glasses, big beard, it's my nigga, ran the whole thing. And gave me a great opportunity. That was one of the ones where, like, the work ethic was there. Just we couldn't get the result right, but just I'm thankful for every opportunity that I'll get. But we were doing the Say It Loud Sundays. We had the Say It Loud comedy show on Thursday. We were doing the Say It Loud Sundays every first and third Sunday. The Say It Loud comedy show is the third Thursday of the month. And we were doing the Vegas show every second and fourth Wednesday. So we were literally going to Vegas twice a month from Sacramento, and we were running the show in Las Vegas, and we were booking people like the whole nine. Shout out to Chris Sosa. Shout out to Kenesha Buss. Shout out to Saul Trujillo. Shout out to you, buddy, did the show. Mm-hmm. Shout out to DJ Soulja. Shout out to Tay Livingston. Shout out to Big Tay. Tay pulled up. Melvin Washington. And a bunch of other people that came out. Sean Grady. So just, yeah. We had the Vegas comedy show, bro. Like, that was it's something that I, like, when I think about it now, like, I didn't put the energy into it. Well, not energy, but just, I don't think I celebrated that success as well as I should have, looking back on it now. Because, yeah, we were living, me and Javon were living in Sacramento, and we were running a show on the Vegas Strip. And, yeah, and, like, we literally had that thing going for about three months, I think. Like, we had it going, and then just, you know, the money, we couldn't, it wasn't balancing out. Hmm. And then just, you know, we was broke trying to make it happen. But just in hindsight, wasn't no trying, because niggas was out there every other week. And yeah, slept in cars, slept in the train station, like, sometimes got a room, like, yeah, bro, the grind was real. Like, we was out there, Vegas Strip. Shout out to the guy, for real, for real. And yeah, some might think that story's a bit shady, but yeah, whatever. Like, what was I supposed to do?
No, we all go through that. We all. You gotta take those opportunities on our journey, just because, like, that's what you're gonna learn from. Like you say, you don't say yes. I mean, you don't say no. You say yes. You know, just to see what could happen, because you're gonna take away something that you could learn from it, because you.
Nigga, you don't remember, bro? We literally spent the night in that man's house.
I remember that. I remember that drive, nigga. I remember all that shit.
Nigga, we spent the night in the nigga's house, bro.
I remember we were driving.
Three of us.
I drove the whole way in there, but then the one time I get out the car, that we just popped the tire in the back. I was like, oh.
Yeah, we got the flat on the freeway, bro. Yeah, that's what I'm saying, bro. Talk about it, buddy. We'd be out there, man.
No, we was. I know exactly what you're saying, bro. Like, that grind of the hustle, but you take advantage of that opportunity, because
fucking buddy.
It's like, you
buddy,
never know when.
Buddy stepping over this story. I ain't gonna let him do it. Nah, buddy a humble motherfucker. I'm not gonna put fuck all that. We were driving all the way to Vegas. Yes, buddy was the driver the whole time. Remember when we seen the carrots?
I was about to say
all
the
fucking carrots on the front.
You're like, look at all these fucking carrots.
Bro, so like we're on the freeway. And like a carrot truck, like tips over a carrot
random
truck,
shit.
Random truck, random carrot truck. So like literally, bro, the freeway is stacked about as high as a fucking second grader of carrots. Literally, like cars are running over. Okay. There is
the
orange,
road was orange,
all orange, like because there's carrot. Like we're literally having to drive slow so that we can smash the carrots, or just we're already driving over the carrots that were already smashed. And like, bro, there was literally people like scuffs, like piles of carrots pushed off to the aside. The carrots tipped over, and when we were on our way to Vegas, literally fucking the back tire popped. And literally, buddy,
like down the hill, like
going downhill.
Yeah.
So we literally had to get off into the lane, and like I ended up walking down the freeway to like block and show that we were changing the tire, because it was him and Javon. Like, yeah, bro, we was thugging out there on the side of the road. We had to put the spare on, like.
We ended up doing the show. We was asking for tips just to pay for a new fucking tire, just to get back. He was
speak on. Hey, so fuck it. Let's. You know what? If people are gonna watch that thing, let's give them some free game. So if you're ever on the road, this is my heads up. This is my tip to help run your bag up. It's actually polite to ask for a tip when you're performing, when you're on the road. So when you're on the road, ask for it. Be like, hey, we're on the road. We're here from Sacramento. Just if you guys enjoyed the show, hey, go ahead and leave us a tip. If you're interested, we'll pass a hat around, you know, whatever you can give, you know, da da da. If you're really good at a sob story, you know, if you want to tell a true one, tell a true one. If you want to, you know, paint outside the lines, hey, it's your paintbrush. So, you know, there it is there, because yes, the hell we did. And yes, we got an extra tire, we got a room, we had extra food on top of what we got paid to do the gig. So,
yeah.
Get paid, young nigga, get paid.
Yeah, out there thugging,
man, for real, buddy. Yeah. Was out there. Matter of fact, I still got the picture of all of us in front of the Vegas sign, me, you, and Javon.
Oh, yep.
Yes, sir.
And then outside of even just like the Vegas shows, if we're talking about like work ethic and things like that, you do a lot of producing and things like that. Producing a lot of shows. You're always, even like with the weed show.
Wow, smoking jokes.
Smoking jokes.
Yeah.
And were you were doing a show, were you doing a show before Smoking Jokes?
No.
Weed show?
Nah, we were just, nah. I had shows where like, well, nah.
I want to say, let's say.
No, yes. No. That's, you're right. Yes, we did. We had did Cannabis and Comedy.
Yeah.
Cannabis and Comedy. That wasn't me, Javon. Shout out to King Life. Me, Javon, King Life, and some other little weed vendors. Corey Calvert, Amy. We were putting together like weed and comedy shows where you could like smoke weed after the show. There were vendors there, so you could get your cannabis needs and whatnot, as well as enjoy live comedy. Fast forward, we did a couple shows. It was hit and miss. Fast forward to the pandemic. The pandemic happened. The whole world was shut down, and one of the guys who was putting on private, like cannabis pop-up shows. We had toyed with the idea of collaborating to do like a cannabis and comedy show, and just, you know, we had just, it was something that we just kind of kept bullshitting with each other, like, yeah, I'll talk to you about it, you know, see us in passing. Then the fucking pandemic happened, and he was like, so you don't want to do it? I was like, fuck yeah, I'm tired of being inside my house. Like, I'm ready to do comedy wherever. Excuse me. So he had the pop-up venue, he was seeing a healthy turnout of people. So on his end, he would market the show, and I would book the lineup, put the comedy together, boom. So when we started doing the first one, it was called the Smoke and Joke Show. It was Smoke and Jokes. During the pandemic, we were actually doing two shows. When it first started, we were doing an early show at 7:30, and then we were doing a late show at 9:30. But weed heads, that 7:30 show would always start at like 8, and then the 9:30 show if our ground started at like 10 or 11. I want to say we started off doing it at 9 and 11:30. Because we were doing an early show and a late show. But then we started doing the early show earlier. But when we first started doing it, we were doing two shows a night every other Friday. Every second and fourth Friday, we were doing that Smoke and Joke Show. Which was, yeah, we was getting a nice little turnout. It was comedy and cannabis. And just basically, you know, for people that indulge in cannabis, you can smoke and enjoy the live show. Put on some great comics, too. Even put on people that you might not have expected to see in that type of an environment.
Mm-hmm.
They were on the flyer, so I guess, you know.
Yeah, I guess they'll perform.
Well, no, they perform. And they just weren't people you would have expected to see in that environment. So, like,
Like the smoking environment.
Yeah.
Because they're not, okay.
Lance and Mikey Winfield did the show.
Oh, yeah, they don't smoke at all.
Not at all. Matter of fact, we tried to book Kyrie, but Kyrie left because it was too cloudy for him. He was like, bro, I can't do this. He was like, it's too thick in here. So, but yeah, there's two dudes like, shit. Lance went, for the people that were there, when Lance was there, Lance went crazy.
Mm.
Lance went stupid. We literally had to pull Lance off the stage. Shout out to Rico. Like, Lance went in. Lance was literally killing for like two straight hours. Lance was.
Yeah, he could do it. Yeah.
Lance was.
Yeah.
We literally had to pull him off the stage. That shit was.
Yeah, people was laughing the whole time.
They was like, let him go. We was like, bruh, he done already, like, bruh, it's one in the morning, nigga. This nigga still cooking. Like, the hell? Like, shit. Lance will go on a Chappelle run. Fuck out of here. But yeah, shout out to the Smoke and Joke family. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to everybody that was affiliated with the Smoke and Joke show.
What made you want to do a smoking show? Because I mean, even like you said, it was during the pandemic. It didn't necessarily have to be like a weed show. What is it that made you just want to go out there and do something different?
You want to know what? At the time, we were doing the Bunsen bullshit thing where we were just kind of smoking on, you know, it was just a podcast. We were just like, the funny thing was that it just kind of happened. Like, it wasn't something that we were necessarily trying to do. It's just that we were smoking on the thing and we would talk about like who or where we got the weed from. So like, if there were particular, you know, vendors or companies that we had got it from, we'd give them a shout out. And then that kind of opened one door that opened another door. And then the conversation about just collaborating about doing a comedy show with people that their business was, you know, providing people's medicinal cannabis needs. So like, on my end, my specialty was throwing comedy shows. On their end, their thing was, I got a bunch of people that like to buy weed, and I think it would be cool if they had somewhere where they could enjoy their weed and get some laughs. So, and then just in general, like, as the laws have changed throughout the time, like, you know what I'm saying? It's become a lot more, it's a lot less of a regulated environment. Like, you have more opportunities to be open about the fact that that might be something that you engage in. So as marijuana has become legal, you know, you kind of realize you might've been ahead of the curve with some of the things that you were doing. Cause like, I saw that on the bill now, like there's petitions for like legalized cannabis bars. Where like now you can go to the bar, to a cannabis bar, and you can indulge in smoking.
Eat cannabis, yeah.
Yeah, so just on the one hand, me and the people that we were rocking with, we might have been ahead of our time with all that. But the one thing I will say though about like cannabis environments versus like alcohol environments is that in all of the cannabis environments I've been to, the threat for violence isn't really there. You know what I'm saying? Like the fact that everybody's smoking weed, everybody's either to themselves or they're super chill or like they're like hippies. You know what I'm saying? So for the most part, they're on a love vibe. And then everybody here doesn't want to blow the spot up. You feel me? So it's not like a bar where, or like a music environment where everybody might be there to fucking turn up. You know what I'm saying? So like in most cases, the environment tends to be more relaxed, friendly. So just, and then like, I will say the difference between a weed crowd and an alcohol crowd is that the weed crowds get the jokes a little slower.
So you got that delayed reaction.
Yeah, yeah. So you got to ease up with the punchlines a little bit. Don't get too creative because you might lose them. But yeah, like it was just an idea that I think that, you know, people on their end were good at what they were good at. And then they felt I was good at something on my end. So collab the two. So it was dope.
What do you think is that testament to like being able to, because that's some one thing with like say with comedians is having, being able to have that relationship with the venue owner to make that relationship work with doing something that, you know, they may not be used to. Because if you're even like, if we're talking about for that aspect, like last week, like your business, you handle the business end. I'm going to handle the comedy end. What are some of those things that you learn from being able to, like, you're that person that's talking to these venue owners and being able to maintain good relationships with them?
Well, the first thing is that I look at, if we're able to get a friendship, that's an added bonus, right? Like I never go into a business deal looking to be friends, like, because at the end of the day, like, you're not my friend. We don't know each other. Like, there's not a real, we don't know each other. Like, we're both here. Our mutual agreement is making money. Right. So I try to keep the main thing, which is how do we make money together? You know what I'm saying? And whatever our agreed upon split is, et cetera, et cetera. So like I mentioned with the Say Aloud comedy show, like before I even had my first show, I heard from what a business owner wanted from the business. Mm-hmm. And also on their end, what they do that makes them successful, right? So like at the end of the day, you're supposed to make money. Now, no matter how much I might like you, if I'm not making any money with you, then like, you know, this is a waste of time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So like I keep the main thing, which is I focus on how do we produce revenue on said night for set amount of time for whatever. So I keep the main thing. And just on my end, I try to make sure that whatever I say I'm going to do, I follow through on, and if not, over deliver. Like I'm punctual. I make sure that like whatever I'm doing, I'm open about it. So like from the creation of the flyer, like just everything. I believe in clear communication up front or in the process, because I don't want to wait until it's the night of and then get hit with something unexpected, nor do I want the people I'm dealing with to feel like I'm giving them something unexpected last minute. So like I mentioned with being in a group, right? You want to make sure that your bad habits don't become somebody else's bad habits. And then when you're thinking about a group dynamic, you want to make sure that on your end, you've covered all of your bases. So just if nothing else, I'm not going to be the problem in this business arrangement. Like if we're trying something and it doesn't work, then I mean, it just doesn't work. But if it doesn't work, it's because the business didn't work. And on the flip, we can actually walk away friends because we can agree that this isn't working.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, because we're friends, we're continuing to do this failed experiment.
Now you just fill it with resentment.
Yeah. So every time you see me, I'm a reminder of this failed thing that we're still doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, so on my end, whoever I'm doing business with, I try to get a clear understanding of what it is they want from me on my end. And if it's something I feel I'm capable of doing, then I agree to it. If it's not something I feel I'm capable of doing, then I don't do it. Like, unlike other people, I'm okay with walking away from a deal. Like, I'm not going to, like, I've taken bad deals and then I've taken bad deals just because I wanted to take a deal. And then I've also taken deals that were, you know, negotiated. And then just all in all, like, there's always going to be a winning give and take, because just at the end of the day, like, I'm not a big enough name to have demands, right? So it's all negotiating. But just even with the negotiating, you can get your demands met up front, which is, this is what I'm going to do. If this isn't what you're interested in, then no thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Which, for the most part, like, before I had the Say It Loud comedy show, or when I was shopping doing comedy, like, you know, people thought I was trying to do a rap show, and I'm literally like, no, I don't rap. And then so just change the whole perception that you had, because, like, what your perception was I was about to bring a bunch of weed smoking Hennessy motherfuckers in here to, like, basically possibly be some gang shit, like, you know, you know what I'm saying, like, you're thinking the whole rap, they think about all the negative things that come with a rap show. And I'm like, well, first of all, I don't even do music, and I actually do comedy. So, like, the whole type of people I'm going to invite to your venue, even if they are that type of person, they're not going to be that type of person on that night.
Yeah, we're not bringing that energy.
Comedy's not the environment you go to create chaos.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? It's a, like, it's an art form where you're coming to sit, listen, laugh, listen, laugh, sit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at no point is the audience required to, like, dance and give it energy. Like, literally all you're supposed to do is sit and listen.
Yeah.
If it's funny, you'll laugh. If not, you'll, you know, wait for the next person to do it better. So
The audience is supposed to talk, but they still do it anyways, but that's on them now.
Right. Yeah. You feel me? Fuck around and get lit up. But just, yeah. So to answer the question, just, yeah, keep the main thing, the main thing, and have a clear understanding of what the main thing is. And everything else will work itself out.
So, yeah, before we do wrap up this episode, like I said, we do play this game at the end of every show called, you know, the Mount Rushmore.
Okay.
Mount Rushmore is just your four comedian inspirations that have, you know, motivated you, or, you know, you feel are the greatest at what they do. Yeah.
Bet. So, yeah, we had this conversation on the phone. So, like, all right, bet. So, I'm going to give you, I'll give you my childhood, teenage four, then I'll give you, like, my four that, as an adult, they're my four, like, icons or whatever, right? Or the four right now that I think are the greatest. And then I'll give you the four that my personal favorites of people that I've worked with, et cetera, et cetera. I bet. So, as a kid, my Mount Rushmore: Eddie Murphy, Martin Lawrence, Bernie. And this one's going to, so Bernie, Eddie, Martin, and this fourth one's going to throw everybody off. Andrew Dice Clay. Like, I liked how masculine and how machismo, like his persona, like, he's a badass. And, like, I liked his aura as a kid. I liked the fact that he was an asshole. He wasn't trying to be your friend and just shut up and listen. So, like, that part of it. So, like, as a kid, I was a big Dice fan. So those four as a kid. As an adult, Dave, Tony Rock. Dave, Tony Roberts, Cat Williams, excuse me, Dave Chappelle, Cat Williams, Tony Roberts, Dion Cole's fire. So those are my four favorites as an adult. My Mount Rushmore of personal people that I have met and worked with. I can't say Tony again. Sorry, I said Tony, a legend. But personally, Mikey. Mikey's one of the dopest motherfuckers I've ever saw. Reagan's, definitely Chris Reagan's. Oh yeah, shit. Lance and Kyrie, like, shit. Like, those would be the four that I'd put up there. Niggas I personally like working with. Shout out to the gang, Javon Whitlock. You feel me? Shout out to the whole family. Tristan Johnson, shit. Arico, fucking shit. D-Rock, Cookie. the whole Saint Isle family shit. Kells, fucking, who am I forgetting? Sammy Eden, shout out to Sammy Eden. Sammy Eden, my dog. Mars Parker, shit. Asia May. Oh, yeah, shout out to the fam, you feel me? For real, for real. Shout out to Mario Hodge, too, yeah. Gang, gang.
All beast, man. All beast.
Oh, BT Kingsley. Shit. Let me not forget. BT Kingsley. DC Irvin. Shout out to DC Irvin. I'm a personal fan of DC Irvin. Love DC. Shout out to DC Irvin.
You know, it's funny because even like a couple of those comedians that you just named and stuff like that, like they could like be like legit like other people's like Mount Rushmore's like guns. Really, just because yeah. There's just going back to how you were saying earlier, there's just a lot of strong comedians out here, and not only Sacramento, but like I said, extended out to the Bay Area. There's just something about that circle, that energy that we just, that synergy where we give off with each other to where we just be able to just create some of these strong comedians. If you're able to take advantage of, you know, going out there, me and them.
Oh, and Regina Givens, yeah. Everybody that was part of the Mikes, let me not fuck around and shit on my crews. The Mikes, shit, the Cowboys and Cannabis, like, everybody that I've ever had the pleasure of doing a group thing with, man, shit, we're all legends. You dig.
Sir. So, yeah, before we do, we wrap up this episode, where can the people follow you at?
You can follow me on my personal page at Michael Calvin Jr. on Instagram, at Michael Calvin Jr. on Twitter/X, or you can follow the comedy promo page at Say Aloud Comedy. That's the page I do all the promos for the show on and everything. So yeah, that's where you find out about free birthdays, free ticket giveaways. We're going to start doing some comedy competitions. Shout out to Dries and the whole Rock to the Crowd family, where you can always catch the Say Aloud Comedy Show streaming on the Rock to the Crowd app. So go ahead and download the Rock the Crowd app. So go ahead, if you have Google Play, if you have an iPhone and all that good stuff, yeah, we're available. We're out there. Big outside of America too, man. Shout out to everybody that follows the streams and the updates. You know, we're out here. Also, be on the lookout, man. Blunts and Bullshit just, it's in the process of coming back, man. It's definitely backed by popular demand.
Yes. So yeah.
For sure.
Check out the Say It Loud Show streaming. It's streaming everywhere.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Yes, sir. The only live comedy show that I know that after it's done, you can catch it again. So, you know, even if you're not able to come out and catch it live, you can tune in to Rock the Crowd and, you know, see what we do, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, things do get edited. So, like, you know, the live show is the live show. It's better to come if you're in or around the Sacramento area. So I just want to point that out there because, you know, if niggas get edited or anything like that,
cut out.
I mean, there is a showroom floor. A cutting room floor. My bad. But yes, sir, man. Shout out to everybody, man. Shout out to that shit, my family, mom, dad. Yes. Love you, mom, dad. Shout out to my sisters and brothers. The whole shit. Everybody. I'll name them because they would fucking get on me. Shout out to Derek, Ashley, Cara, Tiffany, Xavier, Joshua, my brothers and sisters. You dig? My nieces and nephews. Jaden, Jordan, Ryan, Adrian, London. Oh, shout out to my London. Shit, I said Adrian, I said London, Jay, Jordan, Jaden. Yes. Boom, man. Shout out to my guys. Shout out to my daughters, the A-team. Shout out to Averyn and Ayana, my babies. Love you. Shout out to Buddy for having me in this motherfucker. Gang in the building.
Yes, sir. So, like I said, my name is Buddy Roaming. I've been the host of the Yeah Buddy podcast. Once again, this episode is brought to you by the Comedy Cash Cow Competition. So if you'd like to compete in the Comedy Cash Cow Competition, win yourself $1,000 and star in your own movie, just go to www.comedycashcow.com right now. Again, the competition takes place May 25th in Vacaville, California. Like I said, my name's been Buddy. This has been the Yeah Buddy podcast. I'll catch y'all the next episode. You catch us streaming everywhere. We out.
Peace.